Yeah.
Oh, at they were trying days, and I used to live, of course. I suppose my greatest fear and dread was the phone ringing, and it was one of our transport airplanes with a load of passengers had crashed.
Yeah.
And I had the one great thing about our air transport organization, and this is not known, that Air Transport Command has never killed a passenger in the whole of its history.
I'll be damned.
It killed their own air crew. I mentioned these training flights, or the AOCs flying, and the Mitchells and so forth, and the communications type of thing. They've killed their own people, their own training crews and so on, but they've never killed a passenger. Mm-hmm. And that training, that goes right back to, I guess, about 46 at the end of the war, which is an incredible record.
Well, now, when you took over, Reg, what size of an outfit are we talking about? One squadron, two squadrons?
No, we were still involved with a photographic work up north. So we had several squadrons of Dakotas and one of Lancasters that were still involved with photo work. But that was coming to an end. So this is where we were getting into the 130s, 435 in the west with 130s, 436 was it down here? I think it was with 130s. Thank you. We had 426, which was North Stars, which ultimately became 437 with Yukons. We had 412, which was a VIP squadron. Then we had all the search and rescue units across the country, all the reserve units across the country, and that was both, that included all reserve units, the ground reserve units, like the radar stations, the radar, the auxiliary radars, the technical training units, the medical units. These were all reserve units at that time, as well as the flying squadron.
Cool, and this all under an Air Commodore.
All under an Air Commodore. Yeah. It was a big command, and it was a big task. I found I was flying. I was away more than half the time, visiting units. But which you, I had to keep on top of the organization. It was terribly important to get out. And, as one of my army friends used to say, to walk the orchard and find out how the apples were doing. And
I enjoyed it. I truly enjoyed it. It was tough. It was hard. But it was most enjoyable. Now, that was, mind you, living at Trenton was delightful after Ottawa.
Mm-hmm.
Trenton, a pre-war base, the accommodation, the AOC's house was a delightful house. The mess was delightful. It had all of the facilities which were just made living very pleasant. It had squash courts. It had a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
Blackie Williams, who was the base commander at that time, had started building an 18-hole golf course on the far side of the airfield, between the airfield and the railway. So that, and there was a beautiful yacht club started at what was the island in the Bay of Quinte, used for bombing practice before the war and during the war. Blackie Williams, when they were rebuilding Trenton to take the Yukon, they had to tear up all the tarmac, where the tarmac was only about 6 inches, so they had to all come out and 12-inch concrete go down for these birds. So it was a hell of a lot of fill.
Yeah.
And the contractor on it was trucking this fill some distance to get rid of it. Blackie said, "Hey," he said, "how would you like to do me a favor?" So the contractor said, "What?" He said, "Well, I want a causeway built from down from out to the island, from by the seaplane hangar out to the island." And the contractor said, "Be my guest," because instead of having to truck this stuff many, many miles, he was going to have to truck it no matter than about 500 or 600 yards. So, of course, he was money for old rope as far as he was concerned. And he did. He built a causeway. He just dumped all this old concrete and gravel and fill and so forth as it was being torn up on that big tarmac at Trenton. And all the runway, the runway had to be rebuilt, all the taxi strips, so a lot of fill. And he built this causeway out. And then, of course, Blackie Williams, as soon as he got his causeway out to the island, then he built a non-public funds and yacht club on the island. And it's still there, and it's now a beautiful yacht club.
No pride from the environmentalists or anything like that?
No, there wasn't, although we did later there was. because it cut off some water flow between the island and the mainland, and as a result, the weed growth took over. The weeds became a problem.
Yeah.
But the damage, he had, what we had to do, as I recall correctly, was put a couple of culverts in.
Yeah.
But that was okay. That was easy to do once the causeway was there.
Yeah.
The thing was to get a causeway. That's what it was.
Think so.
Well, that living, as I say, that living in that sort of environment is an interesting job. A lot of problems, but there were problems that made the job interesting. A lot of heartburn. I'm setting the environment before I get into the operational thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of silly things. Concern about smuggling. Always, every time I went to the squadrons, one of the things I'd always speak to the air crew about was smuggling. Because they always had opportunities to smuggle, naturally.
On around the world trips.
Oh, yes, sure.
Yeah.
Everywhere they went, there was always an opportunity to bring stuff back. And,
mm-hmm.
and I was to always hammer them and say, damn it, we're being trusted. It's a position of trust. And we of all people, have got to not be accused, or worse, convicted of smuggling. Well, damn it, when the boys were coming back from the Congo, after the United Nations doing the Congo,
mm-hmm.
we had 119s out there. And an airplane...
The
119 was the boxcar, the flying boxcar, twin-engine flying boxcar.
Mm-hmm.
Airplane landed at Goose Bay. We don't know how or why, but the customs... of course, the crew came off the airplane, and the customs said anything to declare... And there were the two pilots, navigator, radio officer, and a couple of an engineer, and a couple of mechanics who'd flown with the airplane for servicing, coming back from the Congo. And all of the crew said, no, nothing to declare. Well, the customs said, are you sure? You know, gave them every opportunity. No, nothing to declare. And of course, the crew... Not so much the air crew, but the guilty party. And there were these two corporals should have realized that something was up and given in right there, but they stuck it out. And of course, then they went aboard the airplane and they took all the cargo off and opened it up. And God, there were cases of booze. These two corporals had decided that they were going to set themselves up when they got back to Canada. And they got all kinds of duty-free booze and packed it into these great big packing cases and, of course, marked it all spare parts and tools. You know. Well, God, now that was all right, because they had been asking. But the real tragedy, and the captain is responsible for his airplane. In this case, the captain, sitting beautifully, because he had no idea. It wasn't his... We didn't ask our captains to open up every damn case to be sure it was not. It was legitimate. So he was clear as could be. But what happened? Of course, they were searched, and all of them had about 4 bottles of booze.
Yeah.
So, of course, immediately, they were smuggling,
yeah.
See, because they were only allowed 1 bottle, and they hadn't bothered to declare the others.
My.
And it hit Ottawa, and so we set up court-martials for the corporals, and I talked Ottawa into letting me handle the air crew, or those who had the extra booze, which unfortunately were the captain and the first officer, summarily. And so I had no choice but to have them up, and they pleaded guilty, and there was just no way around it. I had to give them a severe rep, which of course ruined the career of the pilot over a stupid thing like getting caught with some booze. And there I was caught between having warned them that we mustn't get caught doing this, and here the captain really... Oh, God, if the captain had only said, yeah, I've got a couple of extra bottles of booze here. And just he'd only just said that. But no, he hung it out. Why? I don't know. He, again, after being... He should have smelled a rat.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Boy, of course. And they went through the airplane, too. They took off panels. They did everything. They knew this every once in a while. We don't know how they got warned, whether it was just pure chance or whether they were warned that something was coming in. But
yeah.
They knew. They would. So... Every once in a while, that kind of thing happened. Well, not very often. That only happened once, thank God. And it went through the command pretty fast that this is what had happened.
Yeah.
And the crew, the pilot, who was a good boy from a career point of view, with a severe rep on his on his file. And the competition in those days was for promotion was just enormous. the difficulty was in picking the best from the best.
Yeah.
It was terribly difficult. Promotion boards were a real bind. And, it, you know, a terrible thing to say, because the problem was, how do you pick the best out of the best?
Yeah.
And, of course, anything like a severe rep on a file, it just ruined him. There's just no way.
Yeah.
That boy finally didn't. He never was promoted.
Yeah.
Competition was too tough, and he blew his whole career over a couple of bottles of booze. Well, that kind of went through the command, and thank God I never had another case, another incident. Although we had many cases of where the customs literally said, okay, and I'm sure this was, well, we'll take this one and we'll go over it with a fine-tooth comb, go right through it. They did that several times. And,
yeah.
And every time I heard it, because there was a delay, it takes time.
Yeah.
And we in the Air Transport Operations Center in Trenton, where we had immediate communication with all the airplanes, both air and ground.
Yeah.
And if there was ever a delay, we were told immediately why there was a delay. And every time we got customs, we knew what was going on. Not once again did we ever get to, or any of our people, were they caught for smuggling. Thank God.
Yeah.
I'm glad it was only booze, too, and it was not something like drugs or something like that. Well, on the operational side,
we'll turn in
right
near the end. And when you come to that end, there's a lot of questions that I have too.
Sure.
Among others, for example, about the this would be the time, if I remember correctly, when the idea was coming into vogue about instead of sending our NATO battalions over to Europe by boat,
this is where we get into the operations.
So
this is where we get into operations.
Yeah, good.
Yes, very
well,
much.
Well, we'll end it there
okay.
at that point
yep.
then, and
fine.
Roll.